guest today is Steve Sanderson. Steve, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. And you?
I'm great. Thanks for being on my show.
You're welcome.
What do you do?
I work at Microsoft. I'm on
you
the... what a coincidence. Amazing. I'm on the ASP.NET team. And my particular role is focusing on developers who are doing a lot of JavaScript. So particularly people who are building single-page applications using technologies like Angular and React and Knockout and other things like that.
Knockout is your project, right?
I did start that project, yes, back in 2010. And since then, lots of other community people have pitched in and made that a bigger thing than I would have on my own.
Well, in 2010, when you started to build this JavaScript framework, could you foresee where the JavaScript world was going? Six years?
No, I certainly couldn't predict everything that was going to happen. No, I think I was a big fan of JavaScript back then. I enjoyed that part of my work as a general web developer more than anything else. And I had used a number of different approaches to doing MVC inside the browser prior to that.
Right.
And it was pretty clear to me that that was a compelling architectural pattern, that it works well technically. And I just wanted to make that more streamlined and better than I had been able to do it up until that point. So I was fairly confident that it was a thing that I wanted.
Right.
I'd pretty well proven that from prior projects, and other people evidently wanted it because other people were attempting to build similar things around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Knockout
was one of the first of these spot frameworks that I ever.
Yeah.
And since that time, I think since this recording started, two or three have been created.
Oh, yeah.
And
I should think so. Yeah.
It's the explosion has just been.
Yeah.
Arrows to keep up with. But you're still making it easier, right? You were telling me yesterday about some tooling that you've created.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice to say things are getting easier and easier over time. To be honest with you, I think that the technology landscape as a whole is moving in a direction of ever-increasing sophistication,
sure,
complexity, and more specialization. There are just so many people now for whom front-end development is the sole part of their job. Like,
right,
back in 2010, that you didn't really get that very much, but these days it's completely commonplace, and people start to specialize more and more within different realms of front end development, and as such, the sort of technologies that we work with, they've just exploded in complexity, that you now have to use 25 different libraries to build a typical project, probably.
Yeah, I think that's the key. So I say making it easier, but it's making it easier in the face of the fact that the expectations are
much greater
for what the browser will do.
That's absolutely right. So we're trying to compensate for some of that by streamlining the path quite a bit.
Okay. Tell me about this tool set. I wrote it down here. This is the ASP.NET Core-SPA.
Rolls
off the tongue.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. We had a lot of budget on marketing and branding there, and that's what they told us. So I'm working on a project that we loosely call JavaScript Services, which is just a bunch of different technologies for ASP.NET Core developers to give them an easier time to do more powerful, interesting things with JavaScript in their applications. And that contains a bunch of libraries, like NuGet packages.
Mm-hmm.
It contains some NPM packages as well.
Okay.
And it contains some project templates for ASP.NET Core that use these underlying packages to give you a really nice project that's got some very modern development features.
Okay, so some of the stuff is going to run inside of your server-side code. Some of it will run in JavaScript code.
That's right, because you've got a lot of server-side code, you've got a lot of client-side code. They need to play well together.
Okay.
And, tying together everything they do in terms of, like, routing and validation is not that necessarily trivial, but you want it to happen. And then there's all kinds of things where they tie together in other ways. Like, you might have some code that normally runs on the client, but sometimes you want it to run on the server as well, or other things like that.
Give me an example of some of the really cool features that are built into this services.
Okay, so probably the most easy to describe and crowd-pleasing headline feature would be the server-side rendering support for single-page applications. So if you are building an Angular 2 application or a React application, something like that, normally that code is going to run on the browser, but in the last few years it's become increasingly desirable to be able to also run that on the server as well, so that you're not waiting for the browser to render the UI. You can get the benefits of traditional server-side rendering for your client-side code. So your server, for example, when the user visits your page, will execute your Angular application, if that's what it is, on the server, produce the initial HTML representing that rendered page, send that down to the browser like a normal web page, so the user can see it immediately without having to wait for any JavaScript to load and run. And then while that's happening in the background, hopefully in very little time, the code actually gets loaded on the client as well, and then the execution can shift from the server to the client and continue from there.
How does that differ from our more traditional building like ASP.NET web forms or Razor forms, where that code is running on the server and sending the client as well?
Well, Razor or web forms are only doing server-side execution. They're not doing anything on the client, so it's just static HTML or maybe with a little bit of JavaScript that you've written on the client. But with a larger single-page application, you'll tend to have a large amount, if not all, of your UI logic written in client-side code. And you will often use the server just to expose data services, like JSON web services, that the client application can consume and interact with. And you would typically use something like Razor for emitting your basic HTML outline for your page, which tells it which script tags to load and that sort of thing. But you wouldn't necessarily be writing lots of different Razor pages for all the different UI elements, because that would all be...
But I was speaking specifically about the server-side rendering of client-side code. When you describe that piece of it, it sounds like very similar to rendering some HTML on the server and sending it down to the client.
In that sense, it is exactly the same as that. The key thing that's different is that it's the same code that runs on the client is running on the server. You don't have two separate pieces of code.
I see. So we're taking code that was designed to run on the client and we're making it available on the server just to speed things up or make it more...
That's right. Although I wouldn't necessarily say designed to run the client, because you probably need to design it to run in both environments.
Okay.
If you set out from the beginning of your project thinking that your code is agnostic to what environment it runs in, it runs in the browser, it also runs in the server, and then you get the benefits of being able to run it in both places, or either, depending on whatever's relevant for you.
Oh, fair. Okay. What else? Some other services that dive in?
The other major area that I've been focusing on lately is to do with build time tooling. So I should imagine that most of your viewers already have some kind of build process for their client-side assets.
Yeah, we're talking about build on the client side is things like minification and combining JavaScript into a single file.
Yeah.
Modification.
Yeah, okay. So if you go back a few years before JavaScript started waking up and moving back into the modern world.
Right.
The only things that people really needed to do with their JavaScript was just minify it and combine it. But since ECMAScript 2015 appeared in ES 2016 and TypeScript, there's now a very strong need to perform all kinds of operations over your code before it gets compiled. For example, you know, TypeScript obviously has to be transpiled. ES 2016 also has to. And modern specs like ES 2015 and 2016 have module systems that are designed for static analysis. So you may well also have your build tool figuring out which parts of the third-party libraries you're actually using and producing a custom build for you. For example, you don't probably want to pull the whole of Angular 2 into your build because that's 1.9 megabytes on its own.
Just pull out the
so
ones
you
that
just
you're actually using
want the parts of that library that you actually reach from your code.
And then your tools will help with this.
Yeah, the tools that we've put in. Well, we're not trying to force anyone to use any one particular build setup, but at the moment, Webpack is standing out as the most easy to use and most powerful, and probably the most popular thing at the moment. Yeah, it won't be forever, but at the moment, it is.
Okay.
And that works pretty well, but we've been able to make it more approachable and more useful in an ASP.NET context by tying it in a little bit with what's going on the server. So one feature we've enabled is development time middleware, or Webpack dev middleware as it's generally known. And that is a feature where instead of having to do the compilation and produce these static JS files on disk that get served, you don't have to do that at all. You can just have a bit of code that's running on your server that will intercept any requests that are made to particularly URL patterns and dynamically serve the compiled output from memory without having to have written it to disk anywhere.
Oh, wow.
That saves you the trouble of having to manually run the compiler. It saves you having to deal with all these temporary files on disk, and it guarantees that you never load your application in an inconsistent state or anything like that. it just speeds up and simplifies the process.
As you're editing and you're testing your code.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it immediately becomes available in the browser without going through this extra compilation step.
Yeah, absolutely. So it makes it feel to you as a developer as if you were serving your TypeScript directly to the browser and it understood it, even though of course that's not exactly what's happening.
Yeah, that's the look. And also, you don't even have to refresh the browser automatically.
That's right. So if you turn on the hot replacement feature, then the browser will open a persistent connection back to the server so it can receive notifications if any of the code changes.
Wow.
And then, so changed code gets pushed into the browser.
Very cool. Tell me one more, and then we'll talk about how we get this code.
So another cool feature that we've got in the Knockout template, because we've got templates, by the way, for a few different frameworks. We've got ones for Angular 2, for React, for Knockout. We've got one specially for React with Redux, which is a special architectural pattern that people often use with Redux. But anyway, one feature I particularly like in the Knockout template is called lazy loading. Mm-hmm. It's a very simple feature, and it's not a novel one, but it's cool just because it's so easy to use with these templates, where you can nominate certain points in your module dependency tree as being split off from the main part of the tree, and then during compilation these are converted into separate little files, and then as a user navigates around your application it will dynamically load the ones that are relevant to whichever part that they are navigating to.
So the idea is that the parts of the screen they see are loaded quickly and they can start working with the application right away, even if the browser itself is waiting
for
the parts that they're not using.
Yeah, that's right. You need this if you've got a large application. For example, I used to work on the Azure Management Portal, which is a massive application. There would be tens of megabytes of code.
We had Jacob on the show just recently.
Oh, well, he probably, he would may have mentioned this to you, or he certainly knows it in detail, but there's tens of megabytes of code. You can't load all that up front.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a system for having it dynamically load as the user moves around on demand without the user noticing, because hopefully it'll be very fast.
Yeah, it is getting faster, actually. I used the Azure Portal quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it's when it first came out, of course, there was not
really. Yeah.
It was just a huge amount of JavaScript. And it's much more static now.
Yeah. Great.
I know I should point out that this is just we're just talking about three features here. And I listened for 60 minutes yesterday, and you were going really, really fast, just screaming through features. There are many more than question one, how do we get this? How do developers make these JavaScript services available to their applications?
The easiest thing is if you are creating a new project, because then you can scaffold a new project which has all these features already in there. The not so easy thing, but still completely practical, is if you've got an existing ASP.NET Core project and you want to add these libraries to it. Mm-hmm. There's documentation for both of those cases on the GitHub repos for these things. So
we put up the show notes.
Yeah, okay. Right. So let's assume the viewers have the link somewhere. So assuming the viewers go there, then there's a good amount of documentation on how to install it. It's a one command line instruction using the npm package manager to pull all that stuff down, and then you can create a new project immediately, and then you can follow through the documentation to see all the different functionality that's in there. And if you've got an existing project, then it's a case of doing a NuGet install, and then also going through the docs to see exactly how you enable it.
Excellent. And are you writing about this online?
I've done a couple of blog posts about it on my blog, but the most amount of writing I've done has been actually the docs for the project.
Okay, where's your blog?
My blog is blog.stevensanderson.com.
Steven, thank you very much.
All right.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I don't know about this technology friends thing. I don't think it's going to catch on.